Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on
a big stop!
Lead Toledo Artis. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and we are sadly going to talk about the legacy of Moses Malone, who died over the weekend. And we have two guests today. First, he is the NBA writer for CBSSports.com and the editor emeritus of Harvard Paroxysm. Matt Moore, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be on, man. Sad and, about this, though.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're joining us, and glad to be able to talk about some Moses Malone memories, even under a sad occasion, of course. And also with us, he is a better frequent guest here at Over and Back. We're always glad to have him, Curtis Harris of ProHoopsHistory.com. Curtis, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. And also, Hardware Paroxysm alone. So let's go throw it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, we're all in the family here. So. As we said, talking about Moses Malone, who played for 21 seasons in the ABA and the NBA from 1975-1995. Played for a lot of teams, but most notably played for the Rockets and the Sixers. Was the first high school player to ever sign a pro contract. It did so in the ABA. Was a three-time NBA MVP, was the also the 1983 Finals MVP, famously for the 76ers that almost swept through the playoffs, and was the first player in all of the major American sports leagues to win back-to-back MVPs with different teams. He was an eight-time All-NBA player, a 13-time All-Star. He is in the top seven all-time in games, minutes, rebounds, and points, and first in offensive rebounds by a mile. He wasn't necessarily the biggest or most athletic big man. I mean, he certainly was strong and big, but he was just a relentless force and was really a dominant player from the mid-70s into the mid to late 80s, kind of knocking Kareem off the perch as the dominant big man in the league. And, you know, for me, there are players that you can kind of sum up with one highlight, but with Moses, it's just sort of like a accumulation of watching him outfox and outmuscle opponents to, you know, get the rebound or make a putback in the crowd or to make a great play. So, Matt, we'll start with you. What stands out to you about Moses Malone?
You know, he won the NBA Championship Finals MVP and his last MVP award when I was 1 year old. So I missed out on him, and for me, he was a player that, as I got more and more into basketball, when I discovered going back through, like, he was a player that was mentioned but never really talked about as one of the greats. And maybe Moses stands out to me as a great example of how advanced stats can actually sometimes help tell stories. And so often those stats are talked about as in they don't reveal how great those former players were. Well, those advanced stats were part of what turned me on to Moses and to realize just how phenomenal he was, because his rebound percentage numbers were so astronomical. And then I started to dig back into the backstory of him, and the more I read about him, I just could not believe this figure, this guy who didn't talk to reporters but wasn't disrespectful. He just didn't talk, mostly because he didn't feel comfortable talking publicly. It started when he was young and he had problems with his teeth and didn't feel like he didn't like talking to people publicly, and yet he was this unbelievable monster. I mean, we're talking about a three-time MVP who gets overlooked completely historically. to the point where the Sixers still have not retired his jersey, which was a horrendous mistake, especially now considering that he passed away. And the more that I found out about him, I realized that he stands out as a figure that really changed the game in a lot of ways, from being one of the early guys to make the leap from high school, going to the ABA, to being an ABA just phenom, to a guy that really took the league by storm and just dominated night in, night out. In the league's most popular era, the 1980s, he absolutely just crushed everyone, including knocking off the Lakers in 83, and yet almost no one talks about him. And to me, he's the most I think definitively, and I know the word underrated gets overused too often, but in this case, I do think it's accurate. He's the most underrated NBA star of all time.
What do you think, Curtis?
I think Matt hit on a lot of good points there. I guess I was for myself with Moses. I'm younger than Matt is. So, when he won his MVP award, I was minus 4 years old. So,
I was so positive 4 years old. So, I was alive, but I do not remember it. So,
but yeah, my first memories of Moses were just, I grew up near Houston. My dad is from Houston. And he actually worked at McGregor Park, which is where Hakeem Olajuwon and Moses Malone had those famous, pickup games in the early 80s. And my dad worked at the park when that was going on. So he got to see some of that stuff firsthand. And so when I was young and growing up, my dad would just tell me about having seen them play those games. So even though I didn't see a lot of Moses when I was growing up, really, really young, my dad would talk about them. And then we had basketball cards in the house, and I would see Moses Malone's basketball cards. So my dad talked about him. So then he taught Hakeem, and Hakeem was my favorite player. So when I saw the Moses Malone cards, I kept them. I had them. I would read up on the stats and the rebounds he had. So although I didn't see any footage of him play until probably I was 10, 11, 12 years old when I watched ESPN Classic and stuff. I always had a sense that this was some mythical figure that was just out there kicking ass on the basketball court all the time. But now that I'm much older, able to, appreciate the stats as Matt was talking about, I really, really see that this guy was just truly amazing and does get overlooked. During the 1980s, 1980 through 1989, he was the number one rebounder and the number two scorer in the entire NBA. And we don't think of him as a dominant 80s star, even though he's the number one rebounder and number two scorer for that decade. So, does need a reappraisal for his value on the all-time standings, and hopefully he gets that. Unfortunately, it's going to be too late because he's passed away now, but hopefully he gets it, something positive that might happen out of it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that, maybe the lack of recognition that he's had, I mean, some of it definitely is that he didn't necessarily have the flashiest personality ever. Some of the stuff that you guys are talking about. And also, he played for so many teams. I mean, he played for the Utah Stars, the Spirits of St. Louis, and played two games with the Buffalo Braves, then had four or five seasons in Houston and four seasons in Philly, then played a couple years in Washington, three in Atlanta, just over a season in Milwaukee before he had a year back in Philadelphia and then a handful of games with the Spurs. So he played with nine different teams, and he doesn't quite belong to anyone. I think that's really kind of a hard thing. I think that really does have an effect on somebody's legacy. And he's probably the best player to really have that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the way he bounced around, sometimes unfairly, the ABA stuff, that was just a factor of the ABA was starting to go under when he joined the league. And the Rockets, when he, 82, he became a free agent. The Rockets didn't have the money to pay him, so they, basically signed and traded him to Philly. And Philly was really stupid. They gave up on him. He turned 30 years old, and they're like, well, he's probably about to go downhill, so let's ship him off to the Bullets. And he wound up making the All-Star team, I think, three or four more times after that. And the Bullets, the Sixers got back a couple of guys that were good, like Jeff Rulin, but he got hurt. And so, they just really lost out on that. So they didn't give up on him too soon. But he just kept bouncing around after that. It was inexplicable, really, how he just couldn't stick with a team for more than 5 years.
Yeah. At age 34, right? So at age 34 with Atlanta, he led the league in offensive rebounds. I could not – I saw that today, and it just blew my mind. I just cannot believe, you know, Larry Brown, Bob Ryan told this story in Loose Balls by Terry Pluto. He said, Bob Ryan said that Larry Brown came up to him and said, "That's the greatest offensive rebounder of all time." And this is when he was a kid. This is when he was 19 years old. And Bob Ryan was like, "Come on, get out of here. He's better than Silas?" And he's like, "Come back to me in 3 years and tell me who you think is the best offensive rebounder of all time." And, I mean, Moses just dominant. And it's weird because it's in an area in which sometimes I give players flack. So one of the reasons I talk about J.J. Hickson kind of being overrated in some aspects is I'm always like, yeah, his rebound numbers are good, but do you realize how many of those are him getting his own misses? Like, he's just missing, clanking bad shots off, and then snatching the rebound. Well, that was, like, what Moses did. Like, Moses just absolutely knew every single time where the ball was going to go when he released it. And sometimes, like, he actually talked about this, he would miss shots because he would know that he could grab it and have a better shot on the offensive rebound. That's how confident he was in being able to grab it. That's insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, he made that an artistry, really. Like, I was watching this Red on Round Ball earlier today. Since he passed away, I was searching on YouTube for videos, and I found this Red on Round Ball about offensive rebounding, and it just, like, clicked in my head, like, how much his offensive game was efficient, even though, like, he's, you know, cleaning up on the glass and sometimes missing shots on purpose. But, like, yeah, he was setting a pick for somebody, and he would just, you know, crash the boards after he set the pick. And I was thinking, like, how that frees up another offensive player. I was thinking, like, Kobe Bryant would be, like, the perfect teammate for Moses, because Moses would set a screen for him. Kobe can just jack up the jumper. If it goes in, great. If it misses, Moses got the rebound. He's going to put it back in. And I don't know how that shows up in, like, offensive efficiency, but it's a different kind of offensive efficiency that I don't think we've really had time to really consider. Just what his offensive rebounding opened up on the floor for his teammates and for himself.
And also, like, you know, we talk about in the modern game, like, oh, yeah, we got to cut down on minutes. We got to cut down on minutes. And I back the science, absolutely, that says that we've got to cut back on minutes. I'm not blaming players. But just to, again, point out how astounding Malone was. So in 82, he played 42 minutes a night for 81 games. And he averaged 36.6 points and 17.3 rebounds per 100 possessions, shooting over 50% from the field. I mean, his production was so spectacular. And that, like, really stands out when you look back at it historically, especially, like, we've got per 100 stats now, so we're able to evaluate the stuff in kind of a better context and to look at it and say, like, these minutes were insane. But beyond all the numbers, you know, Charles Barkley called him dad. Like, Barkley had a really moving statement today. And I'm sure that he's going to, you know, he'll probably make an appearance on TNT when the season starts and want to talk about Moses. And, like, Curtis mentioned that he mentored Hakeem. I mean, Malone fundamentally drove the course of the league in terms of big men. And that had ramifications for another decade and a half. And it just shows you how impactful Moses was, despite being a guy that was not like a super, he wasn't like a vocal superstar. He wasn't like making big declarations. Like the fo-fo-fo thing I thought was funny because I found this in a classical article. He said, "I wasn't actually predicting that. I was just trying to say that that's what we need to do. If we want to be a great team, we've got to, like, we really need to sweep." And that's like the most Moses thing ever is he was so understated in every single aspect. I mentioned this to a few people today. I actually tried to get Moses for a book. I got so obsessed with him in 2010 that I did like a massive amount of research because I wanted to be prepared. And I reached out to the family through the NBA PR. And then NBA PR said, "Sorry, they're not interested. Maybe another time." And I was planning on trying to get to him in person because that was during the Hunter regime. And I have questions about whether or not that staff actually passed along my message. So I'd always been like, you know, if I ever see Moses, I'm going to ask him. Like, you know, and I thought about it a bunch of times. Like, maybe I should just go ahead and, like, track it because I knew I could get his number. I was like, maybe I should just track it down and call him. And I never got around to it, and now I'm just, like, killing – like, today I've just been crushing myself because I always felt like Moses' story was one that needed to be told. And probably by somebody better than me, like, you know, probably somebody like Jonathan Abrams or somebody else. But I just always was crushed because he wasn't just this phenomenal player in terms of his production and stats. He wasn't just this really intriguing guy that drank red soda and like ate terribly all the time. He wasn't just this guy that like did not talk to the media and was completely the anti-star. He was also a phenomenal teammate and a guy that had an impact on the league that I don't think people realize. Like, not only did he shape that Sixers championship team, but he mentored Charles Barkley in a way that really took Barkley to the level that made him an MVP and changed the Western Conference race for half a decade. I mean, the effects just keep going on and on. And again, I feel like nobody really realizes that.
Yeah,
I don't think I've heard anybody say one bad word about Moses.
Not
like one. There's like, I wish he talked to the media more, but that's not really a bad thing. It's just, I never heard a teammate say like, oh, Moses was awful in practice, or Moses didn't work hard enough, or Moses was a jerk. It's like people just had nothing but good things to say about Moses.
Yeah. And like Moses, you know, it's like Moses played in the ABA in the 70s and played in the early 80s. And that's a time period in which obviously there was a lot of stuff going on in the league. Like there was a lot of stuff. But then you also like realize, I mean, he played until 1995. Like he played until 1995 and he was still productive really up until 92. So it's just remarkable what he was able to do for not being a guy that was crazy athletic, for not being a guy that, well, I mean, he was in his early days, but like, you know, eventually, as he bulked up, but he wasn't a guy that, he wasn't Bird, he wasn't Magic, he wasn't a shooter, he was a big man. He took that pounding every single night, and yet he played, what, how many seasons? Like
21.
Yeah, 21.
21 seasons. Are you kidding me? I another number, and I hate to go stat heavy, but I just couldn't believe this today. I was like, I wonder how many points, rebounds, and blocks he has compared to a lot of the guys all the time. And I was like, well, he's probably up there, but I would bet that Malone's higher than him, that Karl Malone's higher than him. Kareem's obviously higher than him. Probably Shaq, I would guess, even with Shaq's notable lack of conditioning. Like, probably just because of the raw production. Nope. The list of points, rebounds, and blocks, the only guy that has the amount of blocks, rebounds, and points as Moses is Kareem. That's it. That's the list. And Kareem played a hell of a lot more games and minutes.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Just how long he lasted, how much he, was able to, carry some teams. I mean, Philly was stacked, but, those Houston teams didn't necessarily have, I mean, they had some okay guys, but they didn't have, they weren't necessarily a well-rounded team, yet they, he was able to kind of push them into the finals in 81 and to, give the Celtics a pretty tough, six-game series there. He averaged 22 and 16 in that series in 45 minutes a game. He was able to really carry teams on his back and just, kind of popped out of not quite nowhere, but certainly, the way that he could have been on the 77 Trailblazers team, but they basically decided he made too much money and traded him immediately without really having a sense of what kind of player he was. And then Buffalo couldn't wait to get rid of him either. And, he goes from that to, being one of the dominant players in the league. It's just, a pretty incredible path.
I found it notable today that there's a retrospective from a couple of years back on his career for the NBA at 50. And one of the key guys that really spoke glowingly of him was Luke Walton. And I thought that was the range of people that spoke highly of Malone, I thought was striking. I mean, Dr. J, Charles, Luke Walton, Hakeem. I mean, there was like the range of people that spoke highly of Moses. And like Curtis said, like no one ever had a bad thing to say about him.
Go ahead. He became MVP of the whole NBA by the time he was 23 years old.
Yeah.
Jason was saying, he could have been part of the Trailblazers team, but yeah, they decided he made too much money to be a backup power forward and center. But the Rockets team that he landed on too, that team, I think the first year he was there, they won 47 or 48 games. And they lost to the Sixers in the Eastern Conference, I think it was semifinals. In six games, so they gave him a really hard series. But the next year, this is the thing about Moses, he's always lurking in the background. The next year, he got the punch between Kermit and Rudy T, And that's what really destroyed like that Rockets team that just won like 48 games, looked like they could have had like a decent chance of becoming a championship squad, because they had Moses, Rudy T, Calvin Murphy, John Lucas, Mike Newland, who's a really good swing man. But when Rudy T got hurt, the Rockets were like, well, crap, we got to make like a panic trade. So they traded for Rick Barry and gave up John Lucas. And that trade really ruined the Rockets for the next couple of years, because John Lucas was the distributor. He kept the team like offense flowing, and then Moses was killing them inside. But Rick Barry, like, not, this wasn't Rick Barry's fault. He was just old by this point. But that kind of like just disrupted the flow and trajectory of that team. So that made the push that he made in 1981 even more amazing, was the team was pretty much gutted by then. But he took them, a 40-win team, and took them to the NBA Finals and pushed the Celtics to 6 games and absolutely killed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that playoff series the Rockets had with the Lakers earlier in the playoffs.
Crushed him.
Yeah, he just murdered Kareem, and then they met in the Finals in 83, the Sixers and Lakers. He murdered Kareem again. Like, Jabbar just wanted nothing to do with Moses. Moses was just so relentless and just – it's like a hound dog. Like, and Kareem just couldn't get away. Moses was just always at him, always just moving him out the way to get these rebounds and just wearing him down. So it's just amazing that he could have had probably 2 or 3 titles, I think, if that punch hadn't happened. But he still got his one title and still ate up Kareem otherwise. Just a really amazing player.
Yeah. And then it's also – like, there is an impact here that kind of goes – that I don't think people realize, which is you know, not only did he go pro, and I read like every SI article under the sun about him today. Many of them I'd already read, but there's a section. I sent this to Zira and Over Edge of Sports because I thought it was so remarkable. You know, his mom was living in a quote shanty without a toilet and a big hole in the wall. This is from Frank DeFord in '79, and Spencer Haywood actually said this about Moses. He said, look, the colleges are just there to use you. If you're black and haven't had a nice, rich mommy and daddy, and now with the Bakke decision, you don't even have the government on your side, then you have no choice. You take advantage of what you have as soon as you can. And it says Malone himself never had any doubts. I'd seen the pros on TV, and I figured I was quicker. People talked about experience, but I never thought experience meant that much under the rack. So I told my mama, let me decide. If I'm going to lose, let me lose myself. So my mama said, all right. Like, Malone today, and you talked about the contract stuff. He bounced around a lot because Moses was like, no, I'm going to get paid. I'm going to get what I'm worth. I'm not going to just come back for you. It's the same stuff we're talking about today. It's the same stuff about how stars should not have to take pay cuts. And Malone bounced in large part because he was like, no, I'm going to get paid. And today he would be simultaneously reviled by fans for leaping and always taking the money. And yeah, I think like the internet circles would also hold him up as a hero, as somebody that just basically gave the middle finger to the owners and was like, how are you not going to pay me? You know, how on earth are you going to say that I'm too expensive when I'm a 3-time MVP?
You know, that same Frank Differ piece, there's a great quote from his high school assistant coach, and who had, you know, become his mentor, and, you know, basically saying that, you know, he was really afraid about him going to the pros. He thought that maybe, you know, if he didn't make it, he could be destroyed. And then, you know, was worried so much because of, you know, his team folded and then the league folded and then he was traded and bounced around. And he says, you know, no, sir, you see, Moses had a lot more faith in himself than we did, which I thought was just like a perfect illustration of, you know, a kind of a guy who was, you know, just was, everyone was kind of worried about, but he had the confidence in himself and was just able to be, you know, just through a force of will, just kind of the similar way that he played, was able to, you know, have a great career. I was wondering if there were any YouTube things that, you know, popped in, either something that you had seen before or something that, you know, was a, for kind of a first time, that anything that stood out to you. You know, I'm sure all of us were looking through, reading stuff and looking through video stuff today.
My big takeaway was that that man knew how to use his ass. He just he was so good at coming under the basket and bumping you out the way. It was remarkable watching it. And Charles has talked about this, about how that was a huge thing for him to understand how to use your hips and how to use your butt to be able to control the other guy. And it's funny because it's actually something that Dwight really struggles with, because he's so long and tall, and his legs are so long, and he's skinny comparatively based on his frame size, that he has a real problem with boxing guys out using his ass. And like Moses just absolutely, I mean, he threw it around like a sledgehammer, and he killed guys with it. And you watch that over and over again, that he would just be under the basket and wait, and then boom, he's right up into you, and he's forced completely out. But at the same time, like, that's what everyone I think remembers about him. But I'm also watching, like, he had such incredible touch. I mean, turnaround fadeaways, like transition. I saw a lot of plays of him when he was younger too. Like, he was getting up the floor. You know, he was able to snag the rebound, get up the floor, and then make the pass to the other guy, then get it back for the little dish in. I mean, it was just, he had a real touch for the game. That, and I don't go this route very often, because I don't subscribe to a lot of the belief that the players in other eras were better. I don't subscribe to the belief that the players are, the talent level isn't great now. Like, I look around, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this league is stacked with absolutely incredible players. But I will say, they do not make big men like Moses anymore. I mean, and maybe we've got that new era coming with DeMarcus Cousins and Carl Anthony Towns and a bunch of these guys, but Moses' combination of what he could do with strength, size, and touch was really astounding. And again, I was watching a lot of his moves today, his little turnaround, like, touch hook shot, and I was like, man, Hakeem took that damn thing. Like, I mean, Hakeem copied that down pat.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing for Moses is that his hands were small for his size. Like, he that was kind of the only thing that I think it's mentioned in that Deferred article, but like, his dad was like 5'6 or something, and his mom was 5'4. They're both relatively short, and somehow, you know, he ended up being so tall. But like, but to be able to have that touch and to have that rebounding, you know, incredible rebounding ability without having big hands, or, you know, your even regular sized hands for his size, is additionally remarkable.
Oh. What I took away watching these videos of Moses was how, when he would come up the court, like a non-fast break situation, how he'd come up the court, he had this kind of gait to him, kind of like shoulders a little slump, and he would just kind of just plop down the court. But then when a shot goes up, the guy just, like, just all of a sudden turns into the fastest player on the court. Like, the quickness he had, like, he still wasn't, I guess, fast, but the quickness he had in getting to the spot that he wanted and using the ass to get people out the way is really amazing. Me watching them, and the hands were not that big, but they were like just lightning quick, where he would just like tap the ball up on the glass and then just tap it up again. He was quick to jump off the ground too. Couldn't jump very high, but he would jump up, tap it real quick, then he would land and go right back up and tap it again. And that's part of like the relentlessness of him. It wasn't just like this one big burst of an act. It was like these series of small little just, like chip away plays, I guess you can call them, where he's just slowly wearing you down on the glass. Like, I was watching his highlight videos, and there was just so many plays where he would take 3-4 attempts at the offensive glass, and the other team is just like getting knocked out the way, like 3 or 4 players just getting bounced around by Moses as he's like slowly getting closer to the basket with each shot he's missed, each tip he's made. And that's just, I think, just symbolizes what he was. Like, it was just this relentless, inexorable force that would just move people out the way and slowly just wear them down. And going back to what Matt said earlier, if people were complaining today about how he was, or, you know, some people might complain that he was like trying to get his money, other people would hail him as a hero for like sticking it to the owners, but the guy did bust his ass, and he deserved every penny he got. He did not take a play off. He was always out there. And the quote that will stick with me with Moses was when he said, "They hit me and I get stronger."
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I want to get hit. I want to get touched. I want to get, like, guys getting on me, because then that just makes me stronger. That gets me more aggressive. That gets me more motivated to go out there and just knock them right back and get the rebound.
Yeah. A few videos that stood out to me is from the 81 finals. There's one rebound, I think it's in game 3, where Moses basically just reaches over his head, like behind him, and just grabs the ball from Parrish and then goes back up for like a putback, which is just like a just awesome. I mean, he There were several times where he embarrassed Parrish and McHale in that series. McHale, of course, is a rookie at that point. So, and then, yeah, the way that he dominated Kareem in the 83 finals, I mean, just there's one where he just kind of gets like three offensive rebounds right over Kareem, and Kareem just can't keep up with them. And then you get to the putbacks at will, and they, you know, obviously swept that series. And Moses went for 26 and 18 in that finals compared to 23 and 7.5 for Kareem, basically out-rebounding him something like 70 to 30. And there's a story that apparently Kareem went to you know, Pete Newell, the coach, for like a rebounding basics camp afterward to kind of to, you know, because it was just – it was something that just that so, you know, was – demoralizing for him. And I know
that big man camp is one of the best stories in NBA history. And but even then, like, Kareem was so far beyond that. For Kareem to lower himself to going back to that camp, I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and then Kareem did add like bulk later on, and was you talked about, I think in his second book, yeah, it would have been his second book, where he was like, he felt like adding like 15 pounds was actually able to kind of make him feel like he could at least, you know, move Moses around a little bit. You know, it's interesting that it kind of led to that change in his career, which, you know, helped him. And obviously the Lakers accomplished a lot, and he still had some great seasons, but he definitely was kind of a change from, you know, when he was a little bit more lithe and lean earlier in his career. One other one, well, two other ones, actually. One is there's highlights from a 1984 Bulls Sixers games where Moses, he goes for 39-19 and he rejects Jordan multiple times during the game and just totally destroys the Bulls big men. And then
he beat up Dave Corzine? This is amazing.
Yeah, I know. He's surprised about that one. And then there's which I think I'd seen it, but it was a long time ago. The Nike ad with Moses, basically just like him in a gym, like working, you know, grabbing all the, you know, working on grabbing the offensive rebounds. And there's like a voiceover, and it's like a really, you know, a neat look at like Nike's creativity. You know, this would have been, of course, before Jordan blew up. I mean, they might have had Jordan by then, but it was still like a time kind of early in the evolution of Nike becoming, you know, what it would be. And then my favorite one maybe is the three quarters of the length court shot that he had with the Spurs at the very end of his career, a buzzer beater. That's a fun one too, even though it doesn't necessarily reflect anything Moses like. It's still just you know, those are always fun.
You know, I found this quote today in one of the old pieces, and I could not believe it. I'm pretty sure Curtis retweeted it today. This, to me, just sums him up, because he was simultaneously quiet to the point of being almost silent, and yet he was absurdly confident without being arrogant. Like, there wasn't really much arrogance to his game. He wasn't going to trash talk you. He was just – he knew how good he was. It wasn't, you know, really even confidence. It was just fact to him. It was just, I know how good I am because I'm that good. I play. That's how I know. It's from his decision to go to the ABA and forgo college. And it's from SI. And it says, turn down the University of Maryland, Malone went with the Utah Stars. Quote, I knew what Peoples was saying, Malone says. And so I told the Stars, quote, it don't make no difference how old I am because I still think I can bust y'all. You just watch my action. I mean, like, I fell out of my chair. I read that and I fell out of my chair. My child's looking at me like, what's wrong, Daddy? And I'm like, Moses Malone was awesome.
I absolutely love that quote. I had never seen it before. It's just amazing.
Moses Malone. I'm making a shirt that says, you just watch my action, Moses Malone.
There you go.
Yeah. And like, I'm not trying to compare myself. Well, I guess I am going to, but I don't mean this in a bad way. But like, when I play basketball, I've always been a good offensive rebounder. That has always been my best skill as a basketball player. So watching Moses play when I got old enough, like and YouTube finally existed, like I would go back and watch some of this stuff, and I take inspiration from Moses. Like, and to hear him talk about like, just watch my action. I was just like, oh yes, next time I go play basketball, I got like inspiration now when I'm on the pickup court. But I'm being like, I'm not going to say it out loud, so that might cause a fight at the parks I play at, but I'm just to myself. These guys are out here, they're going to have to watch my actions. So I'm just going to go out there and just try to use my ass as best I can, knock some people out the way, although I'm like really skinny, but In Moses' honor, I'm going to do my best to knock him out the way, give him to watch my action.
Carry the torch, Curtis. Carry it.
Yeah.
I am. I'm going to do it for him.
And I like kind of final thing for me. I like that kind of talking about like kind of being humble and like just sort of being a guy who like accepted his role or was willing to sort of sacrifice is going into the 83 when, you know, when he signed with the Sixers from that classical piece about the 30th anniversary of that team. Earl Cureton, the quote was, Moses was a perfect fit. He came with open arms and said, this is Doc's team. He made it clear he was the final piece, that he was there to help Doc win a championship. And there's a pretty good book on the Daily News' coverage of the Sixers during the 83 season. It's on Amazon for pretty cheap. And just basically articles kind of documenting the time. And it's that's definitely like a theme that Moses has of the time, like, yeah, I'm here to help Doc win a championship. Like, I respect Doc. Doc, this is Doc's team. I'm just here to help out, which is, you know, a cool attitude for a guy who, you know, was going to win his third MVP that year. I mean, that's just says something about, like, hey, you know, I'm willing to, it doesn't need to be about my ego. It just needs to be like, hey, I want to win a championship just like everybody else does, and here's what I'm willing to do. And that's a cool thing to see.
Well, something just popped up in my head. I just got, this would be really, really quick. But I just realized, like, looking at Moses' teams played for list, these are people that Moses Malone played with in his career. Maurice Lucas, Marvin Barnes, Calvin Murphy, Rick Barry, Rudy Tomjanovich, Julius Erving, Andrew Toney, Charles Barkley, Dominique Wilkins, Jeff Malone, Bernard King, David Robinson. Like, this is a ridiculous stretch, like, going from, like, Marvin Barnes in the mid-70s to David Robinson in the mid-90s. Like, these are his teammates. And then, like, he taught Akeem and Charles, as man mentioned earlier. So, like, this guy just touched on and saw so many people, and all those teammates just releasing statements today, all just absolutely saying nothing about him. So I think to play for two decades with that many teams and that many people, have everybody still say great things about you, I think that says a lot for Moses.
He also played with Dennis Rodman on the Spurs, which I'd forgotten about. So I'm sure that was his favorite teammate.
That's true. He did also play with Dennis Rodman.
So, Matt, we'll give you the last word.
An unbelievable player, an incredible teammate, a mystery and enigma to the media, which I think the fact that he wasn't acerbic, he wasn't against it, it wasn't a political move. It just, he just didn't like to talk to the media. He talked about that in his Hall of Fame speech. He was a guy that just wanted to go to work and win games. And if you love basketball as much as the NBA is a personality sport, I don't know how you can love the game and not love Moses Malone.
Well said. Well, thanks, guys, so much for sharing some Moses Malone thoughts. Really appreciated. Everyone, of course, can check us out at hardwoodparoxysm.com, and we're on Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. And appreciate if you'd follow us and check out what we're doing. We definitely appreciate it. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.